Now, we got a big reaction last week. We were talking about the case that came before the Kerry courts, a Kerry man who struck his wife with a livestock whip when she was holding an infant in her arms. He was jailed for a year, having pleaded guilty to one charge of coercive control. The Central Criminal Court, which is sitting in Cork, heard that over a period of 20 years, the man punched a woman in the face, caught her by the throat, knocked her to the ground when she was pregnant. He also threatened to burn her in her family home after she temporarily left him. The 50-year-old man, who cannot be named for legal reasons, had subjected his wife to relentless and torturous physical and verbal abuse over a period of 2 decades. If he allowed her to go somewhere, it came with conditions. He controlled whom she could be friends with and tried to turn her against her own family. The man, who has 4 previous convictions and previously spent time in prison arising from a fatal incident, admitted that he engaged in behaviour that was controlling and coercive. He spoke of having traditional values and explained his behaviour by saying he had a short fuse. The court was also told in the case that he had self-referred to a programme called Men Overcoming Violent Emotions, or MOVE, as the organisation is known. There was lots of people had lots of views on the sentencing length and other things like that in relation to this case, and a lot of people expressing anger over that. But we wanted to find out more about MOVE and the work that they do. It's Men Overcoming Violent Emotion. It's a group of experts in action against violence against women and domestic violence. And they're the Irish representative on GRIVO, that group of experts on action against violence against women and domestic violence. The body of independent experts responsible for monitoring the implementation by parties of the Council of Europe Convention preventing and combating violence against women and domestic violence. Now, the work and the courses they run are designed to work with perpetrators to try and rehabilitate them, try and figure out why they are perpetrating this level of violence against their partners or against women in the majority, in the vast majority, and trying to make sure they never go down that road again. Dr. Michelle Walsh is the CEO of Ireland's perpetrator intervention programme, MOVE Ireland. She's got 15 years in experience in the field of domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. And I spoke to her yesterday, and I first of all asked her to tell me a little bit about the work of MOVE and how it does what it does and what it does with perpetrators of domestic abuse.
The work is only in its infancy. We're 30 years old, but the work is only in its infancy. We run a behaviour change intervention programme. We have 12 programmes running around the country. And I suppose it's predominantly at the moment aimed at male perpetrators of domestic violence. We do recognise and we know that there's a need for perpetrator programmes for women, and there's also a need for perpetrator programmes for same-sex couples. At the minute, we work with them on an individual basis because we don't have the funding and the resources to actually look at what we can do with those cohorts, even though there are programmes in other jurisdictions that do it, and I suppose that's where we'd hope we'd go in the long term. But for us at MOVE, generally about 60% of our referrals are self-referrals, and the other 40% of those referrals come from other services like probation. But generally, if somebody refers or gets referred onto a MOVE programme, it's a behaviour change intervention programme, and we are very, very strict and considered about who we let on a programme. Our primary aim is for the safety and protection of women and children. So from the minute somebody fills out a referral form to join our programme, we are also getting their partner or their ex-partner's contact details, and we're offering support to, we have a partner contact support service, and we offer support to the partners and the ex-partners. And in some instances, we could have multiple partners getting support at the one time. From one particular man. We also offer a counselling service for the survivors, and we also offer counselling to the men post-group. So generally, coming into the programme, a man will do an assessment with the area manager, depending on where he's living, and that assessment is basically looking at his motivation and his willingness to engage. And if we're not seeing that at the start, we won't offer somebody a place on the programme.
Does that mean, Michelle, they have to want to change? They have to want to address the violence within them?
But, you know, with any of us, even if you look at basic counselling premise, anybody that goes for help with anything, even if you go to the doctor, if you're not willing to take the tablets, nothing's going to change. You know, if you've got an infection and you take the antibiotic, it's not going to get better. So it's the very, very same for us. There has to be some. Now, we're not saying that somebody's got to be coming, because quite often they don't. They'll come and they'll recognise certain things that they're doing are wrong, but they won't maybe have expanded that to look at all of the different behaviours that they're engaging in. And once we have an in, and once we have somebody that's willing to look at their behaviours, and we have something to work with, we'll accept them onto the programme. Yeah. What happens once they get accepted onto the programme then is their partner details are passed on, and, you know, our partner contact support team go and help start offering support there if they can. With the man, he will go through a series of one-to-ones where he's meeting with the facilitator, and they're just basically assessing his motivation to change, his willingness to change, working with him around safety planning, timeout techniques, all of those tools that might be useful to him going forward in the program. And then eventually he will get into the program. And the program has six different modules. Each module has a different content. They're looking at things like power and control, parenting, respect, sexual respect. And at the end of every module, then the facilitators that are working with that man, the area manager and the partner contact support person come together, and we do what we call a risk management. So we're constantly evaluating and checking for risk and seeing whether it's escalating or de-escalating. And obviously, if it's escalating, we will then call on other services, or we'll put a, you know, we might help that woman get into refuge or do whatever we need to do if that's warranted.
Yeah. Michelle, is it possible, you talk about obviously violence, and there's different forms of violence. There's the verbal abuse. We have this whole area now which has been recognised under law. We're seeing convictions for the first time in this country of coercive control. There may be no physical violence involved. It doesn't mean that abuse isn't happening. Is that an area that you work with as well, with perpetrators?
Absolutely. I mean, coercive control, it might be new, and it might be new in terms of legislation and language around it. But it's not.
It's been there forever. Yeah.
It's been there forever. And you cannot have the domestic view. You cannot have domestic violence, so physical domestic violence or sexual violence, without having coercive control in the first place. Because, like, for instance, if you're going to rape somebody, coercive, you know, you don't do that, or you don't get to that point without being able to control them in other ways first. And normally it's only as things escalate and the coercive behaviours, some of them maybe aren't working so much anymore, that you get to the more extreme forms of violence. So coercive control is underpinning and everything we do all of the time.
Yeah. Michelle, incredibly simplistic question, but does it work?
Yes, it does work. It absolutely does work. And there are fantastic stats. We don't have any specific to Ireland, but we do have stats from the UK, and you actually only have to look at the evaluation of the DRIVE project in the UK at the moment. That's been done by Professor Marion Hester, that shows that not only do perpetrator programmes work, but if they're well resourced and if they're well supported with other supports around the man, they'll actually not only reduce the amount of the incidences and the amount of domestic and sexual violence, but they'll actually reduce other crime rates as well. So they do work. Project Mirabel back in 2015, again, was done by a leading feminist researcher in the UK. And that will show you that, you know, men coming into group that had a 60% engagement with, say, domestic violence, that reduced to like 3%. And men who were engaged in sexual violence, the levels of that went down post-programme to zero. So it does work, but again, it's down to the motivation of the person to want to change.
Yeah, there you go. That's Dr. Michelle Walsh there of MOVE, talking a little bit about the programme and the work and the issues around it. We're going to hear more from her in that interview about where the work needs to go here in this country to try and reduce the levels of domestic violence. We'll get to that after we take these. Yeah, keep your views, comments and opinions coming into us on the programme. We're hearing from Dr. Michelle Walsh, who is the CEO of MOVE, the organisation that works on men overcoming violent emotions, about their programme, about how the area has developed over the last number of years and where it needs to go from here.
With that in mind, how concerned are you at the current trends on social media and in public discourse, the rise of the male influencer, toxic male masculinity, where there's people actively, you know, whether they believe it or not is irrelevant, they're making money off feeding a constant stream of video and information and content that's telling younger men, you're in control, your masculinity has been lost, Western society is failing because the man isn't in control. How dangerous is that in terms of breeding domestic violence down the line?
I think it's extremely dangerous. I think we have so many struggles in terms of online content, the manosphere, pornography. I think we absolutely need a hell of a lot more legislation. And I know that there is some coming in terms of even pornography and people's access to that on their devices, and access, children's access to devices, or young adolescents' access to devices. And I think it is a huge problem. I also think that we're at a tipping point where men and young boys don't know. I think that they've lost their way, or they're feeling judged in terms of, you know, mixed messages about what it is to be a man. And I think we really need to look as a society, and I think globally, it's not just within Ireland, how do we address that, and how do we make safe spaces for men to talk about their emotional well-being and, I suppose, growing.
At the moment, they're facing an onslaught online of guys driving around in Ferraris pretending to have this amazing lifestyle, and they're telling them, do not talk about your emotions. You're a man. Yeah. This is what you do. You control the woman, and your life will be successful and fantastic if you do all that.
Yeah. They are, but I suppose what we have to look at is what's driving that. What are they missing within society that's actually driving them to believe what they're being told?
Yeah.
So that comes back to, what are we doing within the home, within education? What are we doing? What are we letting them have access to at a very early age? What's fueling that? And I think that there is good work happening within this country on those types of issues. I think there is legislation coming to look at how do we curb what people are actually being exposed to. But then what we have at the moment is we have this whole cohort who've actually, I suppose, just had access and are caught up in this kind of rhetoric or manosphere, whatever you want to call it, and how do we manage that?
Yeah.
That's
a big question. Yeah.
It's a complex question, yeah.
Michelle, can I ask you, you mentioned resources earlier on, I'd imagine more are needed. And do ye face any pushback from people who would suggest or say, especially given some of the horrific details that we see to our justice system of what is done to women by domestic violence and domestic abusers, that they say, you know, lock them up and throw away the key. There's no rehabilitation here. They're lost to violence and we just need to jail them forever. Is that something that you face?
I've heard it. I think the tide is turning a little bit on that, and I'm really glad that it is, because, you know, I've spent a lot of years working in women's services. We can't put the whole world in refuge. We can't half of the world into jail and throw away the key. And also, that's a very simplistic answer, because if you think about it, those people are fathers, brothers, sons. Not everyone is the sum of what they have done. So I think we have to give people the opportunity to change and to grow. And also, you have to consider that you put somebody into prison, and if you don't do anything to help them, they're going to come out and they're going to do the same thing over and over again. If you can aid somebody in changing, then you have the capacity that they might be a better father, that they'd be better in relationships. And then that ripple effect is really what we need to address the epidemic we have of domestic sexual and gender-based violence. Because at the moment, we have this influx of people coming forward, and that is brilliant. But we're supporting their recovery, but we also need to support the others' side of the recovery. We need to actually help people to go, okay, I suppose if you look at it, if you think about women in this country and domestic sexual and gender-based violence, every place that a woman presents, we have a pathway for safety and protection. Be that if she's in a pub, she can ask for Angela, she can go to her hairdresser, they might have even got training at this stage. Midwives get it. If you're a man in this country and you are recognising that your behaviours are not great and you're seeking help, where do you go? And we need the same type of resources and the same type of structure around what perpetrators in this country. So every place, at whatever level you present, where is the pathway for you to get help and get support?
Yeah. So, and we don't, I take it we don't have it at the moment. You don't have the resources to do that.
No, we absolutely don't.
And Is the political will lacking, perhaps, maybe?
No, I think the political will is really, really starting to change. I'm very hopeful that it will. I see it within Europe as well. I've recently been appointed to Grevio. And my trips out to Strasbourg, I'm seeing that even within the whole Council of Europe, there is a push now to start looking at and start looking across Europe at what's happening with perpetrator programmes. I'm lucky enough that I sit on the board of a brilliant organisation called WWPEN, so they're working with Perpetrators European Network. And so I think that the shift that's happening within Ireland, I certainly see it happening across Europe as well, where other jurisdictions are looking and going, okay, we need to do something else here. And what's the missing piece of the puzzle? And the missing piece of the puzzle is, do we need to put more supports around what we're doing with perpetrators? They're certainly doing it in the UK. They've started in the last 4 to 5 years with the Drive initiative, and like the feedback and the results from that seem quite encouraging. So yeah. I think there are jurisdictions where we can look and go, okay, what's happening that's working well, and what can we implement and adapt to work within our...
Yeah, okay. Final point, you mentioned legislation there, the court system. I suppose a better way of tracking whether perpetrators who self-refer actually go ahead and refer and complete their courses?
Yeah, and I suppose that is a huge piece of work, and I think it's something that I would be hoping that maybe the next national strategy might on domestic sexual and gender-based violence might take into consideration. Is at the moment, if somebody self-refers onto a programme, we have no way of ensuring, if a judge advises them to go onto a MOVE programme, we have no link back in with the judge or with the court system, unless the man is in probation, to go, actually, he didn't fulfil the programme, he was booted out, and he wasn't successful. And we need those type of, like they do in other jurisdictions. I mean, Scotland has a brilliant model. They have the Caledonian model, where somebody can be put on a programme instead of going on a prison programme. But at the same time, if they're not engaging and if their behaviour isn't changing, well, then they will end up doing a custodial.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Michelle. Yes.
Well, to be fair.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah. Okay, Michelle, well, look, thanks for going through it and explaining how it works. I think it'll be illuminating for a lot of people who maybe don't think about it or don't know that it's actually there. But thanks for taking time to talk to me about what's happening in that space this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks a million, Jerry.
There you go, Dr. Maria Michelle Walsh, I should say, talking about being the CEO of MOVE, the programmes that they work, the success they're having in the UK with their programmes in terms of reducing the level of domestic violence and violence reoffending and re-perpetrating by those who are convicted of domestic violence and coercive control. It sounds like more money needs to be put towards it, and there is that concern, and saying that self-referring is one thing, it might be said to a judge to try and get a more lenient sentence. but you have to be accepted. You have to show you're really ready to actually learn and develop strategies to change your behaviour before you're accepted. You can't just say it and say, Alakazam, give me time off my sentence. If you have a view on that element of it or any element of it, get in touch with us in the programme.